Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Joel Garbin as we talk about his work, Breakthrough Power. A few more questions, then we'll get to your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Joel Garbin with us, his work, Breakthrough Power. Tell us a little bit about the book, Joel, and where can you get it?
Well, the Breakthrough Power book is meant to be a good primer for the mainstream public about what's been going on in the development of breakthrough energy technologies for a number of decades, with a focus on what the implications are for a new energy era. And there's all kinds of amazing things that can occur on our planet if we embrace the research, development, and eventual deployment of these type of technologies. I mean, we could clean up pollution in a way previously thought impossible, because most of the efforts to clean up pollution are stymied by the cost of energy. If you have very low cost energy, we now can have a tremendous focus on remediating the environment. Of course, there's so much concern about climate change and what the potential impact of greenhouse gas emissions are from the burning of hydrocarbon-based fuels. Well, if we're using sources of energy that aren't based on the combustion of fuel, then we have the ability to maybe make great strides on the whole climate change issue. And I can tell you for certain, George, in many of my travels, I'm going to conferences where there is the scientific and engineering and other constituencies that have responsibility for infrastructure in cities and in states and provinces. In Canada would be one example where I do a lot of business travel up there. And what is repeated again and again is just how vulnerable so many cities are to these intense rainfall events, mm-hmm. and the high amounts of runoff and flooding that occurs that is destroying valuable infrastructure. And now this, I know in our country there seems to be a lot of kind of polarization around the whole, you know, greenhouse gas, climate change, and all this and that. But in many countries, including our northern neighbor Canada, this is taken very seriously because of what happens when you have storms that should be on average occurring only 100 years because of their ferocious intensity, but then they happen every 2 to 3 years. And it ends up, you know, devastating, you know, so many towns and infrastructure. Well, what we see now is that the insurance companies are some of the most prominent presenters at these conferences, because they're talking about, you know, what their liabilities are for insuring all of these properties, and they're seeing an exponential payout for property damage. And then the banks, same thing. You know, they have to decide on, you know, well, where are they going to lend for building new homes? Are they going to do it in areas where you know, previously they weren't thought to be vulnerable in a floodplain, but now they are because of these intense storms? So I'm seeing more and more of this. So, you know, this is something real. You know, the climate does seem to be changing. You know, where I live in Portland, you know, in mid-April, it was near 90 degrees here. It broke the previous record by 8 degrees. Just unthinkable.
Like April was one of the hottest Aprils ever.
Yeah, and we're fully, it appears we're fully maybe 3 weeks further along as far as the vegetation. You know, Portland's known as the city of roses. The roses started blooming weeks ago. And it's just, you know, anyone who pays attention to the natural world around here, you just like, holy cow, what's going on? I mean, things have shifted. Canada has been having fires in northern British Columbia, and those started in early May. You know, everyone knows about what was going on in the Fort McMurray, you know, northern Alberta fires as well. You know, it was, you know, basically they evacuated a town of 90,000.
Oh, it was horrible.
Shut down the oil sands projects up there.
You know, so costing almost $1 billion, by the way.
Oh yeah, yeah. So these things are happening. They're real. You know, we can't ignore them. And there's a lot of highly professional engineers, civil planners, scientists who are looking at this, trying to figure out how do we do this. And what's becoming very, very clear is everyone unanimously agrees that more clean energy is going to help this out. And, you know, we're trying to widen the conversation beyond just wind and solar to include a lot of these other potential energy sources that are much higher energy density, meaning that with a much smaller footprint device, you can generate a lot more usable thermal or electrical power. And that shifts a lot of the game when suddenly we have the support behind those and these start to be developed and deployed.
All right, let's take some calls. Jediah in Boston, Massachusetts, east of the Rockies. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
Good to have you with us.
Very good. I like listening to your show.
Thank you.
Except I do believe that, you know, we are the most advanced beings in the known universe. And when I say universe, I think the Earth is the entire universe. And if you look at Nikola Tesla, we don't hear much about him, but Nikola Tesla was pretty much, you know, he's pretty much responsible for the 21st century, if you think about it, in terms of all of our advancements in radio, how we communicate with each other, and how we suck power from the Earth. You know what I mean?
Yes, I would agree that Tesla's made huge contributions to science, engineering, you know, electrical power infrastructure itself, AC current, and a number of other inventions that are little known and hopefully will be developed.
All right, thank you for being part of the program. Popped right off there. Joel, with these technologies, are there other nations that are ahead of us?
Well, George, you know, from my viewpoint here, this is a global phenomenon, the development of these technologies. It's not like there's just a few of these endeavors going on. There's hundreds or maybe thousands of these developments going on around the world. Now, I am proud to say, as an American, many of the most you know, robust developments started here. Like, for instance, we talked about cold fusion. That started here. And there's other things as well that are going on. And so this is leveraged around the globe, which is a good thing, because I believe that it helps to make sure that there are likely populaces, political infrastructure, that will be more receptive in certain areas, even if they're lagging behind in others. I mean, here in the U.S., I would say that policy-wise, generally, the United States government has not been very embracing of the true breakthrough energy technologies. They've been, you know, at the Department of Energy and even the ARPA-E agency within the Department of Energy, which stands for Advanced Research Projects Agency, Advanced Research Projects Energy. You know, that agency has more embraced things like developments in wind and solar, you know, power storage, batteries, this type of thing, but really haven't engaged on these true breakthrough type of things that we tend to be about here. And it's unfortunate, because there's so much innovation that goes on in this country. And, you know, we have a very inventive people here, you know, but we really haven't seen the type of support for this. You know, I had introduced draft legislation in 2007 to members of the U.S. Congress that called for the serious and urgent support for R&D of breakthrough energy technologies. And when I first kind of you know, shopped this out to the public, when, you know, I was doing presentations and various programs, and the feedback from the citizens were, oh my gosh, this, yeah, absolutely, we should do this. This makes sense, especially when they saw that in order to provide $2 billion in support, you know, publicly, you know, which is you know, a pittance. Compare, I mean, that's probably the pizza budget at the Pentagon for a year. It would amount to about, you know, two cups of coffee from every, you know, every citizen in the U.S. to potentially have any of a number of these breakthrough energy technologies really advanced along the time scale here. But it really did not get a serious look in Congress. You know, because I would say the the lobbies for the existing energy infrastructure, coal, oil, gas, nuclear, and then at that time it was the emerging solar and wind lobbies that now have become quite powerful. That was dominating the show, and no one really had space in the conversation for what we were promoting. But now we think that people are starting to listen because we're starting to see actual investment. We're seeing bankers show up at the international conferences on cold fusion, which are held annually, at various places around the world. Now there are bankers showing up there. There are these various venture capital firms that are showing up there. They're very interested because now they know it's real, and it's happening in a new way. It's just a shame that it's lagged behind for so long. It's really time to get this on board and in every country.
We landed on the moon in 1969, nearly 50 years ago, and no one has caught up with us. How could we be so far ahead technologically than all these other nations? Is it a money thing? What is it?
Well, that's a really good question, George.
50 years, Joel.
Because, as we gave the example before about, technology development, I use military aerospace as an example, but in all the other areas of science and technology, it has been an exponential growth curve. But yet, we're not seeing the deployment of those advances in the public domain to create a social benefit for the human population and to produce the needed environmental benefit for the planet and our companion species. And the reasons behind that, in my mind, I'm just going to say it the way I feel it. It's a spiritual problem, George. There is such a deeply ingrained separation mentality and an ego-mindedness that keeps people in this state of scarcity thinking, intense competition, fear of loss of all kinds, whether it's prestige or material power. This is a sickness that's endemic in humanity. And the only way I believe we can address this is for people to start questioning what is their purpose here. And I don't mean what is their purpose as a biological organism called human. I'm talking about what is the spiritual purpose of each dignified human being that comes onto this little sphere. Now, I heard your guest last night, brilliant physicist, who talked about all these amazing things going on in quantum science, but that he really could not square with the spiritual principle, and I'll call it God, because everyone's familiar with that term. And when it comes down to defining one's purpose, that purpose is imparted by the Creator. And we come into this world that will try to ingrain in us a false purpose that is all about fear, it's all about ego and scarcity and competition and condemnation, retaliation, endless vengeance. And none of that has anything to do with our holy purpose. Our holy purpose here, everyone can get in touch with if they choose to go inside and listen and make the appeal. I can speak to this personally from the standpoint of having had the calling that I described early in this program. And I know what my purpose is here. It's healing. And I can't accomplish that purpose if I'm doing things that are dissonant with that purpose. So I can't attack an individual. I can't harbor thoughts of vengeance toward another individual. I can't think that I must hoard what are the material things in my life. None of those things square up with one's holy purpose, with their real purpose. All right? Things that we teach our children that are basic: be kind, be sharing, be loving, collaborate. do all of these things that we teach as children, but then we rapidly throw out the window as soon as we enter the office suite, you know, or the factory floor. You know, it's a crazy backwards type of thinking.
All right.
It is a spiritual issue, and we have to square up to that and look at it maturely. And I invite everybody to take that time. You know, maybe you start by weeping for this world.
Maybe.
Yeah, I've done that maybe many times spontaneously. And sometimes it's from things that, you know, come across a news flash. Sometimes it's something I hear that happened down the street, or something that I hear happened to a child, or what's this craziness that's going on in the Middle East and all of this. But it just is like, what is going on here? And my just spontaneous response will be to weep for this world. But that doesn't mean that I go into despair and paralysis. It means that, okay, now it's time to square up with my purpose here, healing. How do I do that? And the way to do that, the way to engage one's holy purpose, is to now call out to that animating principle, call out to the God of your being, and ask for that direction. Don't take your direction from another human being.
Ask
take
or plead.
Take your direction from the source itself, and it will be given you.
But Paul, let's go to Paul in San Andreas, California, on the wild card line. Hey, Paul, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hey, gentlemen, I really love his talk. It was great.
He's good.
Anyway, what I have to say doesn't have a lot to do with right now, but you talked about large companies stopping people with good inventions. My grandfather came from Germany.
Okay.
He was a German Jew, mm-hmm. and he invented a gas saver and put one on his car and one on my mom's in a 1935 Pontiac. And I don't know what happened to him, but he tried to get a patent on him, and the big tree shot him down.
I bet they did.
And they took it away.
All that, yeah, that's been a story. I think it's probably happened, you know, many, many, many times around the world. And it's time for that nonsense to end, Paul.
It's
and
dangerous.
That's what we're calling for. We're calling for a new ethic around energy here, and it has to do with sharing. It has to do with adopting the worldview that, look, we are all in this together, all right? If we're going to just simply sit by and watch the collapse of our ecosystem happen in slow motion or fast motion, because it could go that way too, and just kind of continue along our merry way of doing business the way it doesn't work anymore, all right, that is insanity. So what we have to do is adopt a view that says, look, we can collaborate. We've got intense genius in our peoples all around the world. Let's figure out a way to do this together. And let's show the compassion and concern and empathy for those who will be dislocated because there's a new economy that comes out of this, and let's retrain them, let's redeploy them.
All right, Joel, hold on. We're going to take this break and come back with final calls. And welcome back. This is our final segment with Joel Garbin as we talk about his work, Breakthrough Power. Joel, good job on this, by the way. I'm very impressed.
Okay, so the word's out. Here's a scientist who believes in God.
Uh-huh. It's everywhere. I had a scientist on last night who did not believe in God. I'd love to get you two together.
Yeah, I listened to that program, George, and I very much enjoyed listening to him discuss the latest developments in quantum physics. And I also, you know, respect where he's coming from as far as what are his sensibilities about the question of the existence of God. Now, you know, again, I can only speak from my own experience and sensibilities here. You know, I believe that we have natural endowments of specific capacities of intelligence. Very clearly, your guest last night has a high capacity for intellectual intelligence. Lisa Gibbons, who you had on,
mm-hmm.
clearly high capacity for social intelligence, right?
That's right.
An inventor of a breakthrough energy technology, high capacity for technical intelligence, and on and on. But see, there also are high capacities for spiritual intelligence. It's every bit as real as any of these things that can be measured in an experiment in a laboratory, or can be observed at a cocktail party. All right, the spiritual faculty is every bit as real, but the fundamental thing is it underlies everything else. It's the source from which all of these other possibilities spring. And I would maintain that is having a balanced blend of the intellectual intelligence, the social intelligence, emotional intelligence, and the spiritual intelligence, all of that seasoned with experience, that defines wisdom. And that's what you find in grandmothers.
Let's go to Barbara in Brooklyn, first-time caller. Hey, Barbara, go ahead.
Oh, hi, George.
Hi.
I just wanted to bring up chemtrails. You had your little commercial there, or not commercial, but saying about it. But chemtrails, I think, are so important. It's just scary to think what they're putting on the earth, and it hits the soil, the trees, the plants, and us, you know. And I'm just hoping that somehow we can correct this. But I do have a site or a website or two that people could go to and look it up.
Okay, but we're talking about energy here, so save that for open lines, which we're doing again tomorrow night. But chemtrails, that's a problem, Joel. I don't know if you ever looked into that.
Oh, absolutely, George. This is something that I started to research in the late 90s. Because, you know, when I was a boy growing up on an apple farm outside of Cincinnati, and when we would see these types of trails in the sky, we called them sky riding.
That's right.
You remember that?
That's right.
Okay,
tic-tac-toe patterns.
And I've always traveled a tremendous amount, you know, air travel. And I'm, you know, as a scientist, I'm very familiar with how normal condensation trails form. And I knew immediately these were not those, that this there was something else in here, that there was some type of aerosol in there. In fact, the other thing I could detect because of my work in fluid dynamics is the way that these chemtrail exhaust trails were formed. A lot of these look like donuts on a chain, okay, or donuts on a rope.
That's right.
That is the signature of a certain type of pump. It's a reciprocating pump. And so I'm just like, holy cow, you know, I can pretty much tell what they're using to spray this stuff out. You would never see that type of fluid signature coming out of a normal condensation trail. So I started to pursue that, and I started contacting, you know, various agencies, the Civil Aeronautics Board. I was talked to the FAA, was talked to the flight towers here in Portland, started talking to meteorologists, blah, blah, blah. And eventually, when I was in Washington, D.C., shopping that energy legislation, I happened to talk to some satellite image analysts from NASA and, you know, started to broach this topic. One of them peeled off immediately, the elder of the two gentlemen there. The younger guy, as I just asked him some basic questions, and he acknowledged that, yes, this is real. It's a military program, and he couldn't speak more of it than that. And I gave him my card, and I asked him for his, and he said, oh, no, you know, NASA's too cheap to give us business cards, which, of course, was just not true, but it was his kind of funny way of saying, I don't want, you know, you spreading, you know, that
my name. Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, I've been following this for a long time. It is dismaying. It's another one of these just outrageous insults to the global populace, and this is another thing that's got to end here. And again, whoever is you know, hiding behind the curtain of what's going on, they are not aligned with their holy purpose for being here. And I invite them to get square with that purpose, because immediately they'll see that keeping this secret, operating these agendas, and being part of the damage that's happening to our planet is something that is very destructive of an individual at a level that goes way deeper than the physical. And I just hope we can correct these imbalances, George. It's so serious.
Well, we got to keep working at it. Let's go to Cody in Hayden, Idaho, west of the Rockies. Cody, welcome to the show. Still with us? Cody? Nope. I don't think so.
Hello?
Oh, there you are.
Hi, Cody.
How you doing?
Good.
So, I want to know if you have heard about the theory that the Great Pyramid was possibly a cold fusion chamber.
I have heard that it has energy generating capacities to it, not specifically cold fusion, but maybe I just haven't heard that part of the research. But I definitely
it's a hydrogen.
Yeah, I definitely have heard that it has energy generating capacities in it.
Next up, let's go to Robert in Baltimore. Welcome to the program on the Wildcard Line, Robert.
Thank you, George. Joe, I certainly appreciate your ethical concepts, and I don't mean to take from them, but I'm so frustrated because I haven't heard anything about the current state of zero-point energy devices. And I ask you, in all of the hundreds of countries around the world, how many above unity energy devices, either by magnetic core, rotation of magnets under a high voltage field or whatever, but the zero point concept, how many devices do you know of that are actually operating in the world today that have not been taken over by some government and hidden and put away, but that you have either seen yourself or know is are operating? And if there are some, why are there not more in the various areas where they're so badly needed, like the middle of the Sahara or the Antarctic or the Arctic or even plains of the United States?
That's a good question.
That is a great question. Thank you for posing that. Personally, I've witnessed a handful of technologies that I would fairly describe as over unity technologies. As far as zero point itself, that the whole principle of zero point is something that becomes a bit speculative as far as what is the source of energy that is being transformed with a technology into a usable output like electricity or thermal power. I think there's a technology that right now is being propagated by a company out of Seattle called Global Emergent Technologies. They have a technology that was developed by an inventor in Germany named Marcus Reed. And this is a solid-state self-charging crystal power cell. Basically, it uses some specific materials and some nanostructuring, and it results in a continuous output of electrical current. It's self-charging, so this thing just runs indefinitely, and it's thought that it is operating off the quantum fluctuations of the vacuum, which, therefore zero point energy. That would be the one device that I would say, even using the term zero point, not to say that it's not real, because I think the vacuum of space is seething and full of potential energy, but whether it's zero point or something else, the fact is it works. And as an applied scientist, I'm interested in things that work more than I'm interested in the theory. And so there are a lot of things that have worked. The second part of your question is this: what has stymied the efforts to bring these things out into the public domain?
Money.
A lot of it has to do with very mundane things, such as the time it takes to take a technology from the back of the napkin all the way out through the process of engineering, marketing, mm-hmm. business development, getting the licensing, actually getting it out to where it's actually a product that the public can acquire. And even in some of the technologies that I myself have invented and that eventually became successful commercial technologies, that timeline is typically, I would say 5 years has been typical in the work that I've done. And these are for things that are not, radical breakthrough energy you know, type of things where there's going to be resistance along the way for various reasons. All right. So, but I can tell you this, these things are coming. They are coming.
They can't be stopped, can they, Joel?
They're a great reason for optimism, George. And they can't be stopped. You can squish a few dandelions along the way, but boy, there's a hell of a lot more that are springing up everywhere else. And that's it's coming.
It's Paul in Canada now on the international line. Hey, Paul, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good, thank you.
Good. We still have snow up here, by the way. that's only in the woods, right? Anyways, my uncle's a military man, sergeant at arms. He's him and a guy had an invention, and basically it's using quartz crystals, and he designed it in the same idea as an atom, and they had it patented, and he had a huge breakthrough. He got a different chemical from a university professor, and when he turned his machine on, it went to 400 degrees instantly and stayed at 400 degrees for over 2 hours, and so they knew they had something. They knew it was good. So my uncle went out and got started getting some backing, some money to further his project. And then when he came back, his shop was gone. It was emptied. His partner disappeared.
Whoa.
And
what happened?
Well, he surmised that the oil company stepped in, because before he went, he had a couple guys come to his house and gave him, I think it was 4 pictures of the Group of Seven to talk with them, and, you know, pretending that they were investors. And he went to the police. He's like, look, my partner's gone. My shop's empty. And they found him. And he didn't want to be found. The police.
How long ago was this?
Oh, almost 20 years now.
Okay, yeah. And the reason why I ask that question is in our observation, these types of heavy-handed suppression tactics, we believe, are starting to diminish, and it's diminishing in favor of getting on board the wave. It doesn't mean that the ethical heart has changed that much in those who desire to profit or continue to maintain their vested interest, but it does mean that they're savvy enough to say, look, this is coming. And to again just step on one, you know, one dandelion doesn't really have an effect on the whole yard. You know, so we really do believe that the awakening of the populace worldwide to the fact that, look, we've got a global emergency going on in a number of different fields of the ecosystem, whether it's atmospheric, whether it's forest, whether it's ocean, whether it's land, you know, we've got all kinds of pressing problems on us as a civilization. All right, people are waking up. They know we need these type of things. All the energy solutions should be in the conversation, not just a select few. All right, and those who are savvy in a business sense, they're going to get on board and they're going to include this in their portfolio. So I think a lot of these suppression things are going to just be relegated to the historian, you know, part of the library there. And I'd be very happy if our book was in that section too.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Let's go to Alta Loma, California. It's Jeffrey's turn on Coast to Coast. Jeffrey, go ahead.
How are you doing this evening, gentlemen?
Good, Jeffrey.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
I've got 2 questions. One, I would like your guest to talk about geothermal, and the second one is, I've read some science fiction novels by a man named Alistair Reynolds, and he's an astrophysicist, and he talks about manipulating the magnetic field to cause propulsion. So, any comments from your guests?
All right, great. Geothermal,
well, yeah,
first of all.
Geothermal, I mean, that's a legitimate clean source of power. It's a very high density power source as well. And it's, you know, it can be considered a renewable source. The thing that needs to be taken into account when you're doing, you know, geothermal wells, you got to be aware of where's the water going after it comes to the surface, if you actually bring it up to the surface. A lot of times, if these are deep water wells, there's other types of strata that it's going through. Some of that could have, you know, toxic metals in it, could even have radioactive isotopes in it. You know, there could be some other things. So you have to look at the full environmental footprint of something like that. But it has certainly been successfully developed in certain areas. I know in the West, There's you know, geothermal projects that are underway, and I believe like in Utah is one area, perhaps Wyoming, some others, and certainly areas, you know, geothermal power in places like Iceland and things like that. You know, they've been using that for a long, long, long time. So yeah, I mean that can be a very clean and efficient source that is you know, fairly fine for the environment. As far as the other person you mentioned, the author,
magnetics.
I'm really not familiar.
What about magnetics though? As propulsion.
Magnetics. I mean, the whole field of electromagnetic technology, both for energy and propulsion, that's very legitimate. And there's a lot of fascinating developments coming down that pike. In fact, you know, a number of my colleagues would say that they feel that you know, those platforms for using novel arrays of magnets and novel circuitry to have either a rotating device, a la magnetic motor, or a solid-state device, which has no moving parts, that's going to have the highest promise to ultimately give us those home power, you know, generators that will even be portable. And I would agree that likely has more promise. It's a little bit behind the development cycle compared to some of these other things we've talked about, but it's coming as well. And from the propulsion standpoint, you know, anything that ends up generating, you know, electricity in a high power density way could be used for propulsion. I mean, you're using batteries in these electric vehicles. If you had a high power density, a small generator that you could use as the power plant for electric vehicles, there you go. Or you could use it to supplement the batteries.
And you've got a conference in Austin, Texas, talking about the global breakthroughs of energy.
Thank you, George. The Breakthrough Energy Movement, the Global Breakthrough Energy Movement, they are our sister organization based out of the Netherlands. And they specialize in hosting conferences. They are hosting one outside of Austin on May 28 and 29. There's going to be a great panel of speakers there on a wide range of topics that anyone who thought that this dialogue we've had tonight has been interesting, they'll find it fascinating. I really encourage them to go and attend that conference. You can go to the newenergymovement.org website, and you can find a link there right on the homepage to that conference.
Super. And Joel, we've got your websites linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Thank you so much. Fascinating. Up next, Mind Potential on Coast to Coast AM.